Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levin.
Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levin, broadcasting to you live from the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. I hope everyone's having a happy Tuesday, as it is. We began a wonderful discussion yesterday about activism and really where it comes from, sort of what your values are, where they come from, and what you've done as a citizen activist. And I've been telling my own story about why I became an activist. And I began with, well, really at a very young age. I talked yesterday about how at age five, I had ripped my mom's cigarettes up into the toilet. And while I'm catching my breath, because I just ran in here into the studio, Mark Grimaldi, you were telling me you had a similar experience with your mother and cigarettes. Is that right?
Yeah, I was definitely not the ripe age of 5 years old. I was more like, I think about 12 or 13, and I was not having to, I think you said, climb up on the counter to get to your mother's purse.
Yeah, I did.
I was just able to go in there, wherever it was, get the cigarettes out, and I would do the same toilet method. And I wore her down. You know, I would take whatever I learned in school and bring it home and show it to her. And to my mom's credit, she quit. But she knew. She was a nurse, so she knew how bad it was, and she quit. And thankfully, you know, she had many years without that. Unfortunately, as I had told you as well, years later, she passed when I was 17 of breast cancer. And you never know the connections. I know lung cancer, there's a very strong connection, but I'm sure it didn't help the situation. But she fought for a long time. She actually had a double mastectomy, and they believed she was cancer-free after the chemotherapy and radiation. And she returned to work, and she worked on the geriatric wing lifting patients, which, you know, you could hurt your back a lot of the time. So she had a tweak in her back and thought that she hurt it lifting a patient. And unfortunately, when she went to the doctor, they had found that the cancer had spread to her bones. And once it's in your bones, there's really not much you can do. But she fought for 2 years after they thought she wouldn't be alive anymore. And we had those 2 years with her, which was a real blessing. So word to the wise, quit smoking if you're listening to this right
Absolutely.
Now.
Absolutely.
It's just not worth the loss that you don't even worry. You know what? If you won't do it for yourself, do it for your loved ones.
Well, and that was sort of what we learned, right? I mean, is that our mothers sometimes would not do things for themselves, but they would do for their children. And it's fascinating to me that you sort of came up with this independently, the toilet method, as we now call it, from me. And I'm curious to know from our listeners also what protests they did early in life or even later in life. We had a great caller call in yesterday about Vietnam. We do have a caller that I hope will call back who had his own form of protest that I thought was a little unorthodox. That's as nice as I can be, because I do want him to call in. I think it was John in Santa Fe who said that he removes signs from businesses that say no firearms allowed. And I thought that was really weird. For one thing, why can't a private business keep out people who have guns? But for this guy, carrying a gun is as much a part of who he is as racial identity, as religious identity. And I'm pretty shocked by that. So I hope he'll call in and share with his former protest. And, you know, let's talk it out. So, John, I'm still challenging you to call in at 888-48-MARK, 888-48-6275. I wanted to go to some later protests that I had going on in my life, because I've been sort of doing these things for a very long time. And, you know, you mentioned the horrific tragedy of your mom dying when you were 17, Mark. It's so it really tears my heart out. Because Mark, by the way, for those of you who haven't met him, is like the nicest guy in the world. I mean, he's not just a good producer and everything for my show, Leslie Marshall show. He's just also a really, really nice guy. And I know how difficult it is. I'm very, very blessed to have my mother still to this day in her 70s and going along strong. But my niece and nephew lost their mother, my sister, when they were very young, when my niece was 2 and when my nephew was 6 years old. And my sister, who was just 33, was killed. And when I say killed, I don't mean a car accident. I mean she was murdered. She was killed by her husband. My sister had a pretty troubled marriage. And for those of you who don't think that troubled marriages or domestic violence happens in good families, I assure you I come from a very good family. Come from my upper middle class family, come from a family with zero history of violence, to my knowledge, certainly none with my parents or grandparents or any uncles, aunts, cousins that I knew of. Never, ever heard about that. And so when my sister told me that her husband had threatened to kill her, I didn't believe her. I take it back. No, I believed her. I didn't believe him. She didn't either. I want to be very clear. I believed my sister when she said that her husband had threatened to kill her. But neither she nor I thought it was anything more than an idle threat. He was very angry. He had done all kinds of things, sexually harassing someone else, and was sued for it, was paying this woman under the table. It was kind of a lot of gross stuff. And my sister discovered it and told her husband she wanted a divorce. And, the night before she was to meet with a divorce attorney, he killed her. The reason I'm telling you this awful, awful story, well, it's for two reasons. One, to let you know that I am not ashamed of mentioning that my sister was a victim of domestic violence, just as she should not have been ashamed of mentioning that she was a victim of domestic violence. All too often, victims of domestic violence, and if I say women, it's because, well, more than 95% of them are women, though men can be victims. The vast majority of the time, it's women. And a lot of times, the women who are, and men, who are victims of domestic violence, are ashamed to speak out, because many times, as with my sister, she married her husband. And it's sort of the thought, well, what will people think of me if they know that I married someone who could be so abusive? Or what will people think of me, sexual assault victims think sometimes, if they know that I was raped and that night I was wearing a short skirt or too much makeup? And the sad thing is that many, many victims of domestic violence, victims of sexual assault, internalize really the societal stigma, there's really no other word for it, of being a victim of a crime. Now, if you are robbed at gunpoint, if you're pickpocketed on your way home from work, if a guy jumps out of the shadows and puts a gun at you and says, hand over your wallet, you can tell your story. People will feel tremendous sympathy. Oh, my God, that's horrible. I can't believe that happened to you. Guy breaks in your home. You're like, that's awful that you were robbed. You know, call the police and get the perpetrator. If you're a victim of sexual assault or domestic violence, let me first state that that's a heck of a lot worse than being robbed at gunpoint. Because someone that you once loved, that you once trusted, someone you were once intimate with, someone who was perhaps your best friend or your spouse, has become the enemy. Think about how painful that is. Think about how awful that is. Frankly, I would think it would be easier to be attacked or raped or harmed by a complete stranger than by someone you once loved. As awful as that sounds, these acts of violence are acts of violence, and all too often there is a stigma with victims. And if it is with a stranger, you know what people say. Oh, well, she was wearing a short skirt. Oh, she was wearing a lot of makeup. What they're really saying, without so much saying so, because most people aren't so crass, is, oh, she was asking for it. Well, word to everyone, wearing sexy clothes is not an invitation to rape. It's not an invitation to violence. A woman or man, woman can look beautiful, a man can look good. There's nothing wrong with looking good. There's something really wrong with someone who commits violence or sexual assault. And yet we have this problem in society where victims are afraid to speak out, even family members. It's one of the reasons I'm talking about it, because I didn't talk about it much. This happened, by the way, 20 years ago. My sister was murdered. It's quite a long time ago. And yet, I didn't talk about it too much. I've been on radio for 12 years. I've only mentioned it a few times, and most of it recently. And my hope, though, in talking about it, is to encourage you to talk about it. Domestic violence, sexual assault occurs in rich families and poor families, white, black, Latino, Asian, Jewish, Christian, Muslim, atheist, New York, Massachusetts, Mississippi, Florida, Alaska, Mexico, Canada, England, France, Mali, you name it. It occurs all over the world in every family. Never think that it can't happen to your family, and never, ever, ever fail to take seriously a complaint of domestic violence or sexual assault by someone you care about. When my sister was murdered, we tried very hard to protect her children. Children whose father had just killed their mother. Absolutely innocent victims, as innocent as my sister, of course. And some of the ones who got it the worst, their father then, running from the law, grabbed them, ran to Mexico. And at the time, we actually couldn't see them. He kept them from us. This is my godson, my goddaughter. I had promised my sister if anything happened to her, I would take care of them. I never, ever, ever thought that that promise would mean anything when I made it. I was honored she asked me, and I didn't think much of it. She was 33 years old. Well, she was younger when I made the promise to her. We were in our 20s. But my parents couldn't see these kids. And they couldn't see these kids not just because he refused. He basically told us to stop cooperating with the police if we wanted to see the kids again. And we didn't want to have to make the difficult decision between taking care of these kids and seeking justice for my sister. Janet was her name, for Janet. But the law didn't help us. Tennessee law at that time, and I grew up in Nashville, Tennessee, Tennessee law at that time said that if you abuse your children, then you can get children taken away from you. Okay, great. But if you abuse your spouse, your wife, your girlfriend, wasn't considered relevant. We tried to prove in a court of law that he killed her. 10 years later, that would be proven in a criminal court beyond a reasonable doubt. Thank God he's serving a 56-year sentence in Tennessee Penitentiary 10 years later. But for 10 years, we tried to prove it in civil court so we could get access to her wonderful, wonderful children. And the law didn't allow it. So just a few years out of law school, I set out to change that law. It was the first law I ever wrote. And all my fun little protests against my mom smoking at age 5 or against a racist country club at age 8 became very, very serious when I wrote the first law I'd ever written to protect victims of domestic violence. And I want to tell you about that on the other side of the break. If you want to call in and share your experiences, I want to encourage you to do so. It's 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back right after this.
Rumor has it he quotes the Constitution in his sleep. Is it Super Nerd? No, it's Mark Levin. Give him a call now, at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275.
Welcome back to the show. We're having a psychological session here, one-on-one, 101. I'm lying on the couch and spreading out my life story, mostly to let you know where my activism comes from, why I'm running for office. Many of you know I'm running for state delegate in Virginia, but more why I'm a progressive, why I'm an activist. Basically, that I learned the hard way, as so many have, that laws are not perfect, that just because something should be a certain way doesn't mean it is that way, and that oftentimes we have to change the law, otherwise a lot of people get hurt. That's why I'm running for office, so I can change the law and protect a lot of people. And yeah, I come at it with my own story. Everyone else has their own stories. You have your story. What makes you an activist? What happened to you? What makes you care enough to want to change your country? What drives you? And what have you done about it? Let's go to Melly in Santa Fe, line 5. Hi, Melly. How are you?
Hello. I just wanted to tell you that I'm very inspired by your story.
Thank you.
I'm very inspired by your honesty and your courage talk about this. As a woman, I'm very grateful. And on behalf of your sister as well, I wanted to just say that and give voice to that for you.
Thank you.
Honor you that way. I'm a shelter worker at a domestic violence shelter, and one of the things that never gets talked about, even in liberal feminism and liberal media, is the effect of pornography in our society, and the fact that pornography itself makes up for about one-third, up to 30% or over 30% of what is on the Internet today, and it is going virtually unchecked by parents. And it is absolutely and without question violence against women, commodified, publicized violence against women. And sexual violence is a very unique and special kind of violence because women, as you know, are the life givers on this earth. We are the ones that bring life, and our bodies have been battlegrounds for many, many generations.
That's
even
true.
When we have discussions about abortion, when we have any kind of discussion about health care, focusing around reproduction, because actually control of reproduction and how we control how you know paternity. That's why I'm Filipino by my bloodline, and our bloodline is transferred matrilineally. Why? Because that's how parenthood is passed, because you know who the mother is.
That's true, by the way, of the Jewish people as well. Under Jewish law, you're
a
Jew if your mother's Jewish.
Exactly, same, and it's actually very common in a lot of.
Mel, hold that point though, because I got to take a break, and I want to hear from you in detail, and I'm not going to be able to do that because I have a break. So hang on with that point. I want to encourage others to call in as well. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. What makes you an activist? Why do you do what you do? Why are you a progressive? You know what? If you're a conservative, why are you a conservative? What events in your life lead you to take action, and what action have you taken? Let me know. It's Mark Levine right after this. This is Mark Levine talking about my life a little bit. Most of you know me. You've heard me for many years. Some of you may be new to me, but many of you don't know my own personal history, and I think you should know who you're talking to. I go on the air. I've been on the air now for 12 years. I pull out my constitution. I talk about health care. I talk about guns. I talk about presidential politics and the Constitution. I think I mentioned that twice now. Helping out working people and so forth. But you got to know where my heart is. You know where I'm coming from. And yeah, I mentioned this yesterday. I come from a very liberal family, a family that believed in fighting for civil rights. And yeah, I'm a bit of a troublemaker. I, from the age of 5, was used civil disobedience to keep my mom from smoking. But you also should know that tragedies that have happened to me have profoundly affected my outlook, and they drive me. They drive me to make sure that everyone's lives are a little better. Everyone has their own personal tragedies. You just heard Mark Grimaldi's. I feel really bad for someone who I care a lot about. And Mark and I have now worked together for 6 years. I feel awful that he lost his mother at age 17. You know, he feels bad about my sister. You have your own agony. Something happened. Somebody died young. Maybe you have a disability. Maybe you were discriminated against. Maybe you're struggling to get by. You're just not making enough money to care for your family and the children. Maybe you've been homeless. Maybe you've got, who knows, some medical problem. Maybe your children have trouble with something. Maybe you have a child with disabilities. Whatever your issue is, I think it's important to have people who write the laws care about individual suffering. Because I don't know many people who've gone through life without some kind of suffering, right? The future King of England lost his mother at a young age. Everyone has undergone some kind of suffering. They're different. We all have different things. You know, I came out as gay. That was hard for me for a while. I actually thought that was going to be my difficult thing, and then I had to face some other worse things, far worse. I actually like being gay. But the point is that this kind of stuff, the bad stuff, the hard stuff, is often what gets us to strive to make a world a better place. At the time that you are really suffering the most, it's really hard to remember that it's because of the suffering that we make the world a little bit better. Because if all were good and all were happiness and roses and puppies and rainbows, what would we do with our lives? You know, the biblical story, and I'm, you know me, I quote the Bible, I quote the Constitution. I'm a weird liberal. The biblical story of the Garden of Eden, as I understand it, Adam and Eve, it's not about the world being 6,000 years old. That's ridiculous. Evolution, billions of years, of course. But the story, the parable of Adam and Eve, even if it's not scientifically true, is extremely true. Because what were Adam and Eve? They were living in paradise. They were living in the Garden of Eden. They didn't know about good and evil. They hadn't eaten from the tree of knowledge of good and evil, right? They lived in paradise. They lived in a land of puppies and rainbows. Everything was perfect. And it was only by knowing about good and evil, it was only by suffering pain, that they began the real task of living life and trying to make the world a better place. If you don't know, if you're in a morphine high and you don't know what's going on in the world, are you truly human? I mean, if you're not actively dealing with pain and suffering as well as happiness and goodness, can you really appreciate the happiness and goodness that is indeed all around us? So yeah, suffering, I think, does have a role. And this is where I get my own sort of religious sensibility in there. But we won't go too far in that. Melly's been hanging on a long time. Melly, you do God's work. Again, whether you're religious or not, you take care of victims of domestic violence. I have so much respect and empathy and just for what you do. And I know how hard work it is. I'd like to ask you, Melly, if you don't mind sharing, what brought you into this work, why you do what you do, how you got involved?
Well, it's kind of exactly what I was just talking about. You know, really just to finish up that thought very quickly.
Please, go ahead.
Around that, you know, around that reproductive control of women, and the level of sexual abuse and violence that our young people are exposed to, like this access to pornography on the internet, is a really big concern, you know, because women bear the burden of bringing life into the world. And as a result, our bodies become that battleground, you know, that basically, it's the same parallel to what is happening to the planet, to the Earth, that same kind of disrespect and disregard, starting with our bodies, you know. So that's where it started for me, honestly. To be perfectly honest with you, I'm a 19-year survivor of incest. My father's a lifelong pedophile and lifelong John. I was raised and brought in and out of red light districts and, you know, prostitution businesses by my father. You know, I'm just being perfectly honest with you.
I thank you for having the courage to share this. I really do.
Yeah.
And I'm so sorry.
And it's devastating. The PTSD that we as women, survivors of sexual assault and violence, survivors of rape, survivors of trafficking, being prostituted. This is happening all over the world, and even
Absolutely.
Worse in countries that are poor, like the Philippines, for example,
yeah.
which is where some of my family's from. Horribly commodified people. Horribly commodified people. Aboriginal women of Canada. I mean, there are populations of women who are literally just being scooped up and trafficked. And commodified. And it's also very important for me to learn how to name the source of this violence. I used to work for an organization where we always talked about violence against women, violence against women. But you know what it is? It's male violence
Sure.
against women.
Sure.
And it's not only that, but it's mostly that. And it's good to name that because we do have to look at where this is coming from. I talk to my husband about it all the time because I tell him, you ride your privilege. And he's a nice guy. He treats me well.
I'm sure he is.
Father, he's a hardworking person. He still rides his privilege because he doesn't have to deal with the kinds of regret, the memories and the trauma, the triggers that I'm dealing with constantly. He's got his own. We all have our own pile of stuff that we have to navigate through life, you know. But if it goes unchecked for him, you know, he can move forward. If we don't watch out, his credit score is better than mine unless we make an effort, because that's the way status quo works in this society. If him and I got divorced, I would walk away from our marriage with a lower credit score, not because I contributed less to our marriage, but that's just how the system works.
You raise a
you
lot
have to always
interesting
watch
things.
Out, you know?
I want to break down what you said, because you've raised a lot of different things.
I got to run. I'm going to keep listening to you.
Please keep listening, and thank you for your call, Melly.
Totally, and I support you as your aspirations in politics. Because
thank you.
Anybody who speaks out for women the way you do has my vote.
Well,
so
send people.
Well,
you can't vote for me in Santa Fe, but you can send people to markfordelegate.com and help me out that way.
I sure will.
Thanks, Melly.
I sure will. Bye-bye.
I really appreciate Melly's call, and she raises actually a number of different things, and I just want to deal with each of them because there's so much to unpack there. First of all, and I know you're off the phone now, but thank you, Melly, for your courage, for talking about being a victim of incest, a victim of assault, sexual assault. You know, it is so hard to talk about. And damn it, it shouldn't be. Because the victim, we know this intellectually, we know this in our hearts. The victim has done nothing wrong. Yes, it's usually women, not always. There are young boys that are molested. It happens. There are men who suffer post-traumatic stress, particularly in the military, and they have that burden. Post-traumatic stress is a horrible, horrible thing, whether for women who've suffered sexual assault or men who've undergone wartime atrocities. So we do have all our privilege. The other point she makes, though, is absolutely clear, and it's not about violence, but about privilege. And that is that it is still true that a woman makes, on average, cents on the dollar to what a man makes. And that people assume, women and men, but more men, assume that a woman is not as good at a job per se as a man. They also assume black person is not as good as a white person, or a gay person can't handle it like a straight person can, or just name it, right? I mean, there's all kinds of prejudice in America that a person who's not good looking, you want to know another prejudice? person who's not good looking can't do the job as well as someone who is good looking. That's not fair. Even the idea of what we call good looking. There's all kinds of privileges that we have, some of which I'm on the privileged side, most of which really. A few I'm on the unprivileged side. But I think that part of recognizing our own humanity is seeing ourselves in others. As saying, there but for the grace of God go I. As looking in another person's eyes and recognizing that they, he or she, is fully human. And, yeah, we all have our own issues. And, you know, I don't want to get too kumbaya and let's all go on a retreat and hug. But, hey, nothing wrong with that. I like a good hug. But this just basic idea that we have to look out for one another. To me, that's the essence of what a progressive is. We can go back to the Bible. After Adam and Eve came Cain and Abel. We all know Cain murdered his brother Abel. And then when God comes looking for Cain, Cain says, am I my brother's keeper? Very cynical response. Well, we know the answer. The answer is yes. Of course you're your brother's keeper. Of course you're your sister's keeper. You must be. Otherwise, you're a real jerk. Frankly, you're something, a word that I can't say on radio. Why are you so awful if you only care about yourself? Well, if you only care about yourself, you're disrespecting all the people who made you who you are. Every single human being on the planet, every one of us, man or woman, from the tiniest baby to the rocket scientist or the largest bodybuilder or the richest man in the world, every single one of us was born completely helpless. A baby, an infant, a child that, if left alone, probably for 30 days, not even, would die. We exist because of our parents, or sometimes our grandparents, or other family members. We exist because we live in a land that takes care of us. Sometimes it's our country. Sometimes it's a friend. But we would not be here, every single person on the planet, from the most powerful dictator to the homeless person in the street, exists because somebody at some point took care of us. That's just a fact. And everybody knows it. It's true all over the world. It's the essence of being human. We all are born helpless. So because someone helped us along the way, we are where we are. And maybe someone didn't help us enough, and maybe we're not as far along as we should be. But if we don't turn around and help others, then what are we? What are we? Because you know what? You're going to die helpless too. I'm sorry to say. We're all going to die. We're all going to die helpless. And hopefully we'll be surrounded by love and friends and family taking care of us. And in between that time when we're born helpless and that time when we die helpless, we are strong, we are powerful, we are able to change the world. Why wouldn't we? Why wouldn't we give back to our family, to our friends, to our country, to our teachers, to our mentors, to all the people that came before us? Why wouldn't we pay it forward to our students, to people who can learn from us, to babies that we can help raise, to children? People were there for us. We need to be there for other people. And if that's not the essence of progressive values, I don't know what is. This is Mark Levine. We'll be right back. 888-488-MARK right after this.
He's a Fulbright scholar, and he speaks French, but he couldn't tell you who won the Super Bowl. It's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. Well, got pretty deep there talking about my philosophy, and you can see how passionately and why I'm a progressive. To lighten things up a little bit, I finally got my call in from the guy I challenged to call back today, John in Santa Fe, the one who was defending his own version of citizen activism, which, again, correct me if I'm wrong, John, it's removing signs that say no firearms allowed from private property. You really do that?
Yeah, I've done that. I find them very offensive, and I've taken some no firearms allowed on premises signs from particular businesses. In the same way that if I was riding my bicycle past your country club and there's a sign out front that said no blacks, no Jews, I'd take that sign too.
So you consider owning and carrying a firearm to be as much of your identity as a black person's race?
No, I consider my self-preservation and self-defense to be absolutely essential to me.
Do you bring your firearms in places where they're not allowed?
What's that?
Once you've removed the sign, which, by the way, is a crime, so be careful about that. Once you've done that, do you actually walk into places that don't allow firearms with your firearms?
No, I don't go in those places. I boycott them.
Okay. You remove their signs and then you boycott them.
The way I look at it is the only person who's going to be in charge of your safety is you. And they're a very effective means of self-defense. And I've been in instances where I was like, okay, pepper spray or gun, pepper spray or gun. And I'm talking about anywhere from St. Louis to Alaska. And I have not had to shoot an animal or a person yet, but I have drawn on a brown bear, and I have pepper sprayed two different people.
Okay. So, well, you know, I can understand why you would.
The cops are only going to show up minutes after the fact, and they're going to take a report. And if, you know, worst case scenario,
John, let me ask you this:
Do
you have any fear of people who are not as responsible as you say you are from using their guns? For example, do you think there should be no firearms allowed in the White House, the Congress, your state capitol, or do you think that people should be allowed to carry a gun right into the White House?
I understand what you're going with this. And like, you know, cops are not allowed to take guns in jails.
Okay.
I understand what you're saying.
So there are places that you think legitimately guns should not be allowed.
Yes, but what happens is that's not the majority of places in the world.
Okay, well, let's talk about some of the places that you've removed those signs from. You want to give me an example?
I'm not gonna mention anything.
You're not gonna tell me the location of the McDonald's on the, you know, no, of course not. I don't expect you to. But can you give me, like, was it a restaurant? Was it a laundromat? I mean, can you tell me the nature of a business?
It's just a non-sensitive business.
Okay, let's talk about non-sensitive. I'll give you one hypothetically because I don't want you to admit to anything. Let's talk about a restaurant. Maybe a restaurant that says no firearms allowed. All right, just hypothetical, and there are restaurants that say this. Is it offensive to you? I'm just going to give you an example. Let's say there's a McDonald's, and it says no firearms allowed inside this McDonald's.
Sure.
Why can't the owner of that McDonald's say, you know what, we had an incident in the past, and I don't want any guns in my restaurant. Why can't the owner of McDonald's say that? It's his restaurant.
They can say that in the same way that the owner of the private club can say no blacks and Jews.
There's a distinction because McDonald's, a publicly serving restaurant under the Civil Rights Act of 1964, actually can't discriminate against blacks or Jews. But they can still say no guns.
I understand what you're saying. You're making a difference between a private club and a public accommodation. I understand what you're saying. And just because it's legal, I don't think it's right.
That's fair. You don't have to think it's right. You don't have to think it's right.
I'm getting back to activism.
All right.
Okay? People have a very prejudiced view against firearms because they, you know, and that sign is only going to affect.
John, I wish you'd called in earlier. You always call at the end of my shows. Do me a favor. Call in at the beginning of the show tomorrow. I want to give you some time, and I want to have this discussion. Dave from Humboldt County, I didn't even get to you, and I really do apologize. I'm out of time, folks, but I'll be back tomorrow.